Blog Talk Radio.
It's to you.
Information, counseling, therapy, and coaching available, why do so many marriages suffer from lack of enjoyable sex, lack of intimate connection, and lack of loving togetherness? Stay tuned. Welcome to the Healthy Baby Boomers Network Blog Talk Radio Show. I'm your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, licensed mental health counselor, healing through love relationship healer, somatic body psychotherapist, and health and wellness coach, helping men and women heal their bodies and their relationships through love. Author of the Love Me, Touch Me, Heal Me book series, the romantic novel Love in the Blizzard of Life, and creator of the 30 powerful Healing Through Love lessons for your soul. This show is all about living your dreams, fulfilling your life purpose, and creating and sustaining love and health and total well-being for the rest of your life, no matter what age you are right now. And in every episode, I speak with vibrant, exciting, and positive men and women who just keep proving that life can and often does get better and better as we reach our 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and beyond. Today, I'm speaking with a very special man, a modern-day Renaissance man, John Wilder. Had an undergraduate major in Bible theology, graduate school in psychology, nursing school education, and attendance at the U.S. Army Leadership School in Germany. His many life successes include articles, winning the cooking award, a few cooking awards, getting second place in a national contractor test, and being published in major national magazines, and his new book that may turn your concepts upside down about love, marriage, and sexuality. So I'm delighted to welcome you, John Wilder.
Glad to be here.
So first, I see you have a diverse background. Tell us a little bit about your background, you know, and then how you came to write this book.
Well, I also did a double major, not only in Bible theology, but in psychology as well. And because I was taking both together, what became immediately apparent to me is there is outstanding psychology contained in the Bible that I haven't read in any other psych book anywhere in my entire life. And a lot of the psychology that I cite in the book comes right out of the Bible. But what I found was that traditional marriage counselors are the biggest reason for divorce in our country, and our divorce rate is the second highest on the planet. We are right behind communist Russia, and that does not speak well for our country. Now, the reason the marriage counselors are the reason for divorce is because they are not getting the skills to do marriage counseling in graduate school. For example, they get zero training in sexuality. Now, what are the big three that couples fight about? Money, sex, and kids. So they can't and won't help them with sex issues, which is the biggest single argument that happens in marriages. Then why do a couple go to a marriage counselor to learn how to stop fighting? They're fighting constantly, and it's just destroying their marriage, and they're trying to save their marriage. Well, once they get to the marriage counselor gets zero training in conflict resolution skills. He has no transferable skills to share with this couple. And so once the couple realizes that the marriage counselor can't save their marriage, they incorrectly infer, oh, my God, our marriage is so screwed up, even a marriage counselor can't fix it, so we may as well get divorced. And when that happens and a woman takes away young daughters away from the household and the paternal father, you would not believe how many women have confided to me over the years in my marriage coaching service that they were serially raped by mama's new boyfriend, and oftentimes the mama didn't even report it to the police, which communicates very clearly to that poor young girl that she's basically worthless, which is almost as devastating as the rape itself. And so I said, we've got to do something about this. And I looked around, and there are marriage seminar businesses around, but they don't teach couples how to be married. They don't, for example, most men are lousy in bed. It's because there's no school for sex to teach him how to give his wife great sex with multiple orgasms. And so the women suffer in silence. And by the time she's 30, she's often got 72% of all married women over 30 have their husbands on a starvation diet of sex once a week or less. Now, most people know a guy in his 30s requires sexual relief 3 to 5 times a week. So he's masturbating to porn, and the woman is often masturbating to porn or the old standby romance novels, but they're not having sex with each other. God invented sex to glue marriages together, and today it's ripping marriages apart. And so I looked around. Nobody was doing anything in any effective way to stop this, and the churches are even more guilty. They do nothing to prepare couples to be married, and so it's a huge national problem.
Well, I love your perspective, and, you know, it's certainly unusual, but there is another side to a lot of this, and it bothers me personally to hear, you know, a blanket statement that marriage therapists don't have this training, because a lot of marriage therapists continue to seek additional training. Many of them are certified in sexuality, so they do understand the issues. And some of them work with
I understand ASEC,
and, you know,
but
so,
that's a postgraduate training that they don't get in graduate school. That's my problem. Yes, I understand.
No, I understand.
I'm very familiar with ASEC.
Right, but I'm saying that there are many dedicated marriage counselors and mental health counselors who do study more, but you're right, a lot of them don't. So they don't have enough, and the therapist themselves may not have that spiritual understanding that you're talking about, you know, from any culture that they come from. Well, so it's a huge problem. And the other piece that I wanted to add here before we continue is that not everybody is ready to be in a wonderful marriage because they have such stuff from their own family background. And that's where the therapy can really help, to delve into those issues and help you to see where it's all coming from. So,
well,
with that,
I understand that. But again, the problem is the fighting in the marriage, and nobody's teaching them how to stop fighting. They're not teaching them conflict resolution skills.
That's true. Most
of my clients come right for marriage counselors as a last resort before they file for divorce, and not a one of them has told me that they got any sexuality training, nor did they get any training in conflict resolution skills. And so I'm just based upon my experience and in polling other people, and I've conducted many polls to be able to write the book, and that's the overwhelming consensus. And I know there's exceptions to every rule, and I'm familiar with ASEC, the American Association of Sexual Educators, Counselors, and Therapists, and they do great work, and I applaud them, and my book is actually on the ASEC recommended reading list. But the traditional marriage counselors coming out of the graduate schools don't get this training. They have to get it after they get out of school, and a lot of them don't bother.
And there's another piece in here that I have had many people come for marriage counseling who are not willing to do whatever it takes to really save the marriage. Have maybe half of the people who come for marriage counseling, one person has a foot out the door. They're already having an affair with someone else. They're in love with somebody else. So they're coming to marriage counseling just to say, I did it, with no intention to follow through. So, you know, there's another aspect to it. That's all I'm pointing out.
Well, of course, that's also true, but that's not the majority, at least not in my practice. It wasn't the majority. They just wanted to learn. They didn't really want to get divorced. What they wanted to do was make the pain stop, make the pain go away. And they weren't getting any satisfaction. They weren't getting any training to make the pain go away. And the other problem with marriage counseling is they will only reimburse for 1 hour once a week. That's a systemic guaranteed failure, because if you need marriage counseling, you need a lot of it in a short period of time. It's like going to the doctor, and the doctor says, hey, Dr. Erica, you've got strep throat. Tell you what we're going to do. we're going to give you a little bit of antibiotic this week. You come back next week, we're going to give you a little bit more. You know, 24, 28 weeks, what I had that strep throat all cleared up for, you would be dead before you were cured. And most marriages die for the same reason, because they're only getting 1 hour once a week. My paradigm was, I demanded that they give me 4 hour sessions, and it never took me more than 2 4-hour sessions to get their problems resolved. But the beauty of the 4 hours, show them that success is possible, that solutions are possible. They just need to be shown how to put these resolutions and these solutions into their marriage, and that instills in them hope. Once they establish a sense of hope, then they have much more motivation to go on to do the work to make the marriage work, because I've shown them how to have hope that these problems are solvable. And so,
That's beautiful. Like William Masters, who created Masters and Johnson, that created sex therapy originally.
Human sexual response.
They had people come. No, they had people come for 2 weeks to stop their whole life and have sessions every day for 2 weeks. And those people.
And they had high success rates.
Right. So you're right. That's beautiful that you do that. And many therapists who get full pay do spend more time, but it's still usually once a week, or seeing both people separately for an hour and a half. It's not usually 4 hours at a time. That's beautiful that you've set that up. But I have another question. What do you see as the difference between marriage therapy or marriage counseling and marriage coaching?
I'm so glad you asked that question. It's a brilliant question. Marriage counseling, the paradigm is talking about feelings. How do you feel about that, John? How do you feel about that, Eric? As if getting in touch with your feelings is going to show you the solution to your problem. Nothing could be further from the truth. It's the expression of those anger feelings that got him in trouble in the first place. The solution is not feelings-based. The solutions are fact-based, where you show them. I talk in two concepts: a self-defeating behavior, and why on earth would you want to defeat yourself? And if you're tired of defeating yourself, I can show you a success strategy to replace that self-defeating behavior. So it's two simple basic concepts, and it makes sense to them. And I can't make you do right. Only you can make you do right. But why would you want to continue to defeat yourself when there's a good solution that's available to you? And they have no argument against that. They have to accept it, because it's the only logical answer is to start doing right and doing it better. And again, it builds into them hope that all they have to do is to have a paradigm shift, and they can truly have happily ever after.
You said there were two parts to it. What are the two parts?
Oh, the second session, I close them up. I answer their questions. I give them more encouragement. But by the time we're done with the second session, they're walking away happy. They have a renewed faith, sense of faith in the marriage. I send them home with sexual instructions on first of all, because nobody's taught these men how to give their wives great sex. There's no training for it. And so I give them training on how to give her great sex, and she comes back with a big old smile on her face, and he's smiling because they've had great sex and they see it's possible. And he doesn't understand that she's not enjoying the sex. She's enduring the sex. She's not getting any pleasure from it. But the women won't speak up. They suffer in silence. And that's why a woman, by the time she's 30, she's got them on a starvation diet of sex once a week. The best review on the book is by a licensed marriage counselor who credits the book for saving his marriage. He was at the 18-year mark in his marriage, and he was fixing to file for divorce because he was tired of being sexually starved. Well, he happened across my book and started reading it, and he put the techniques to work in the bedroom, and the first thing out of his wife's mouth is, "You're cheating on me, aren't you?" He says, "No, why?" She says, "You're doing stuff in the bedroom you have never done before. Where are you learning this stuff?" And he said, "Well, I've been reading this book." Well, she didn't believe it. She said, "Can I read it too?" And he said, "Yeah." But she was so clueless that after reading the book, she came to him and asked him, "Is it really true that men want their wives to wear a frilling, lacy lingerie for them?" He said, "Oh, yeah." She went out and bought a whole wardrobe of frilling, lacy lingerie and said, "Listen, I'll never tell you no to sex again as long as you keep making love to me the way you just did." And so most Amazon reviewers.
Yeah, I have another piece. I have another piece in here. What about
okay.
a woman is pregnant, then she gives birth to one child, then a second child, and she's also working, and she's exhausted. And how can they be enjoying sexuality?
Well, you have to make sex a priority in the marriage. You have to make the relationship a priority in the marriage, because the only way a marriage works is if you're operating as a team. And what you do is you schedule sex, and instead of waiting until at night when you're exhausted and just want to go to sleep, you schedule a time earlier in the evening and get the sex in, and then whatever energy you have left over to do house cleaning or whatever. And that's the other thing, is men need to just pitch in and do equal amount of housework. This whole thing of women's work and men's work is just taboo. It's housework. If you're sharing a house, you have to do things to keep it up. You have to do the laundry, do the dishes, vacuum the rug, do whatever, clean the toilets. Men need to do their fair share, and I teach them that in the book and in the seminars and in the coaching that I used to do. But you have to make sex a priority and make your relationship a priority. That should always come first, and everything else comes in behind it.
That's great. All right, so what is it about marriage coaching? What's the difference? You didn't quite answer that yet.
Marriage coaching is about showing them solutions to the problems instead of talking about feelings. And there's a number of problems.
Okay.
Number one, argument over money, argument over sex, argument over vacations. And a lot of the arguments arise because they're sexually frustrated and they're angry. There's this anger this undertone of anger, because a man's angry because he's being sexually starved. The woman's angry because he's not meeting her physical needs, and so she's angry. And so fights and arguments break out quickly because they're so irritable, because they're not, neither one of them are being sexually satisfied. And God made sex to glue marriages together, but the churches are just as guilty. You can't talk about sex in church. Really? There's all these sex-positive messages in the Bible, including an actual command to have a great sex life, believe it or not. But you don't ever hear that in church.
No. And that's in part of the Bible. It's not everywhere. But
No, but the sex goes from Old Testament to New Testament. There's sex-positive messages from Old Testament to New Testament, but you're never going to hear it in church.
Mm-hmm.
The commandment I was talking to you about is in Proverbs 5. It says, rejoice always with the wife of your youth. Let her breast satisfy thee at all times, and be thou always ravished in her love. Well, ravished is just a biblical term for great sex. There's no other way to interpret that passage other than to have great sex.
That's beautiful. But what happens when your partner has cheated or continues to cheat?
Well, here's the number one reason that men cheat, and it's going to be a surprise. If women perceive anything that the man says, even a possibility of that he's critiquing her, she will go nuclear on his ass, yelling, screaming, slamming doors, usually the bedroom door where the sexual starvation begins, name-calling, and the worst treatment of all is the silent treatment. Now, the Eighth Amendment in our Constitution prevents the government from inflicting cruel and unusual punishment on prisoners, but nobody's arresting housewives or inflicting cruel and unusual punishment on their husbands. And the problem is that men have this contract in their mind, and they don't discuss it with their wives before they get married, but their contract is, listen, I'm never going to physically beat on you, but I expect in return that you're never going to verbally and emotionally beat on me. And the first time she goes nuclear on him, he is devastated. He cannot believe it, and she's violated his trust. He like a turtle, retreats back into a shell, and he is so angry and so enraged about this, he's not going to beat on her, but he withdraws emotionally. And now, when he was ignoring those cute young things, now he's noticing them, and if some cute young thing offers it to him, he's going to take her up on it. Out of a passive-aggressive sense of revenge, that's the number one cause of men cheating on women, because they verbally and emotionally
Except
abuse them.
There's a piece you're missing, because an awful lot of these men start out by hurting the wife emotionally, saying mean things, looking at other women, doing stuff that puts her down, maybe speaking to ex-girlfriends or ex-wives, stuff and then she's finally angry. Very often it's not that she starts the anger first. It built up. She's quiet, she's accepting, and then she explodes.
Well, that's certainly true in some cases, but most men really want to please their wives. They start out really wanting to please them, and usually what comes first is the wife exploding on him, because women are so insecure that they can't stand any kind of critique of them. Instead of just saying, okay, in what way can I resolve this? How can we make this better? She punishes him with the unspoken idea that, don't you ever critique me again, you no good son of a bitch. You think this is bad, it'll be twice as bad the next time. And there's an iconic line from Walden Pond, and it was repeated in the famous play, Our Town. Most men lead lives of quiet desperation, and it's because their wives emotionally and verbally bully them on a regular basis.
Well, I'm sorry to differ with you so much, but I also would say most men and women lead lives of quiet desperation. It's not just the men. I've worked with couples for years, and I see a lot that the men do. There are many men that really care and want to create a wonderful marriage, and there's many men that don't quite do it. You know, and
well, I'm not denying that there's men that are real jerks and shouldn't
right,
be married.
That's what I guess
I'll be the first to admit to that. You know, but I'm talking
but
about
talking
the norm.
About
yes,
the men that really do want to be married, and the wife is not being feminine enough and not creating the love enough.
Yeah. Well, you know, women need to be taught how to treat their man as well. We're
mm-hmm.
living in a society today where there's a 50-cent word called misandry. It's spelled M-I-S-A-N-D-R-Y. It's the opposite of misogyny. It's a reverse sexism by women against men. And you
right.
see it on the commercials. The commercials portray the man as this hapless, helpless, gotten himself and or his family into trouble yet again, and the heroic wife swoops in to save the day, tossing off condescending and insulting comments to the guy as he's slowly sinking into the carpet. And the feminists are equally bad at promoting, you know, anti-male. Anything male is bad. You know, women good, men bad. And so men don't even know how to be men anymore, because there's a direct attack on masculinity and manhood in this country.
All right. I understand all of that, and I'm very disturbed by the backlash. But it's a backlash because men have controlled women for so long. Look at all the abuse. I grew up in another generation, and there was plenty of abuse. Every woman I've spoken to has experienced some kind of sexual abuse. She might not have been raped or anything like that, but there was something inappropriate, harassment. We all went through that. So,
I'm not denying that, and that should never have gone on. But I'm talking about married couples.
But I'm saying so, right? And so but it's inclusive in the married couples. Many of these men have been through that kind of stuff. So we have a lot of.
Well, that was true back in
the
50s, but that was true back in the 50s, but it's not nearly so much true today.
It was true in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. It's not. It's only recently that it's finally out in the open, and that's why there's a backlash. And that's why everybody needs training.
Yeah, there needs to be a backlash, because no woman should have to suffer through that, and I would be the first one to say that, you know, not only no, but hell no. And I have taken on guys that, you know, beat on their wives. I said, listen, you want to beat on somebody, beat on me, because I fight back. And I make it my business to intervene. I don't condone that. I'm not even beginning to try to condone that. I'm fighting against that. So I'm not denying
and
what you're saying. I'm agreeing with what you're saying. But I'm saying, assuming that he's not abusing her, and
right.
I'm talking about the majority of couples. Always there's guys who are going to be abusers and they're bullies, and they should just be eradicated or jailed or whatever. But shouldn't be in the marriage. But I'm talking about the normal couples that I deal with, or I used to deal with, because I'm not doing it anymore. I'm going to do it on a mass scale in the marriage seminars. But I'm talking about conservative Christian couples who don't beat on their wives, but the wives don't have a problem beating on the man emotionally and verbally.
So you're also talking about conservative Christian who has a sense of spirituality, who has a sense of right and wrong, wants to do the right thing, and then his wife is not appreciating him and dumping on him, you know. So it's just important to clarify that.
That's been my demographic. That's the couples that I've catered to, and so I don't have as wide of an experience as you do, because apparently you take on all couples, which is your right, and I understand that, and you want to cater to everybody. I've always tried to cater just to conservative Christian couples and operate in that specialized niche. So my target demographic is different from your target demographic, which could explain the differences that you describe, which I easily admit to.
And I also had a different experience. I've worked in Connecticut and in New York and in Florida, and I see a big difference of the couples that I work with in Florida. Just they come, I don't know, you know, a difference in what goes on between the two people and what their attitude is. But let's get on to something that I love that you wrote, and I'd love you to share it, that you have 7 habits of highly dysfunctional people. So I think that's what I was getting at, that a woman can be with a highly dysfunctional man, and it's not her fault if she gets angry. So that's why I was bringing that up. So what are these habits, you know?
I don't have the book in front of me, and I don't have them memorized.
I have the list, so I can trigger it for you. They're intellectually lazy. What do you mean by that?
Oh, man, absolutely. The average man never reads a book outside of high school. You need to stay on a path where you're on an ongoing discipline of continuing the education, because if you don't, you are 50% higher risk at developing Alzheimer's. Men are very intellectual and lazy. They don't read at all, and that's part of the problem. Is there are books written to show men how to give their wives great sex, but they don't read the books. So that's the man's fault, and I'm taking men on in the marriage seminar over that, as well as in the book.
Great. We have 7, so I want to kind of go quickly because we don't have that much time. All right. This is important, this one. Lack of critical introspection skills.
Oh, yeah. Everybody sees themselves as Lily White, and the other partner is the devil incarnate. You have to be able to recognize your own faults, admit to your own faults, and work on your own faults. And most people don't have the self-discipline or the self-confidence to look at their ugly side and address it. And so it's sort of kind of like looking in the mirror. We all have this habit of looking in the bathroom mirror and seeing ourselves in the ideal situation, and then we see a picture of ourselves, and the picture doesn't look like anything that we saw in the mirror, because we have this certain way of looking in the mirror, but the camera sees it all. We're always surprised and shocked at photographs of ourselves. Have to be able to look at yourself and all your ugliness on the inside.
Wonderful.
And fix it.
All right, the third one, lack of personal integrity. That's huge. We're seeing it in politics for sure.
We're seeing it all over. If a cashier gives somebody back too much money, they'll keep that money instead of giving it back, apparently not knowing that money's going to come right out of that girl's paycheck. People lie incessantly. Where is integrity? There is no integrity. It's so rare to see people with actual integrity. Lying is never excusable.
Okay, next one.
Actually, it's one of the 7 abominations to God.
Wow. All right, lack of personal self-discipline. What do you mean by that?
Guys get lazy. They stop working out. They become couch potatoes. They don't exercise. And they don't spend enough time with their children. They don't spend enough time with their wife. I tell men, listen, you've got three demographics here. You got yourself, you got your kids, and you got your wife. But you're spending the majority of the free time on stuff for yourself. Like if you go fishing, it's an all-day event. If you go hunting, it's an all-day event. If you go golfing, it's an all-day event. but you give short shrift to the wife and children. You should be giving equal time to the wife and the kids, where both, all of them, are getting time with you and making memories together instead of taking all that free time for yourself. That's men. That's a huge problem with men.
Next one, lack of setting personal goals and working toward them.
Most people are directionless in life. They don't set goals. They don't work towards goals. And that just contributes to their lack of self-confidence and self-worth because they haven't achieved anything. They haven't even attempted to achieve anything. And they just, it goes right back to being a couch potato, just sitting there vegging out and getting fatter and fatter. That's another reason a woman doesn't want to have sex with a guy, because he's got that big old belly hanging over his belt and it's not comfortable for the poor wife.
All right. Lack of
I'm on the women's side here. I'm on women's.
Well, that's,
I'm advocating for
when
women.
When you talk about it, it's very important to remind women that you are on their side. You're not just telling them they have to do something, because the men have to do something too. Both people
I tell people I'm an equal opportunity critic, and I'm going to tell both of you what you're doing wrong and the self-defeating behaviors and the success strategy that you can replace it with. But I take both on men and women, and the one that I'm advocating for the most is the children, because the children are the one who suffer the worst in divorce. You're familiar, of course, with the Wallerstein study.
We're going to talk about that if we have in another minute. Let me just finish the seven habits of highly dysfunctional people. Next is lack of taking personal responsibility and blaming others for our failings.
It's not my fault. It's all your fault. I didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah.
So many people take that attitude. How dare you critique me? I didn't do anything wrong. It's all your fault. It's like the wife beater.
Yeah.
If you didn't piss me off, I wouldn't have to beat the crap out of you. Really?
Right. Well, that's just simple. It's to the point. And the last one is self-centeredness and the unwillingness to give freely of yourself.
So many people are selfish and self-centered and narcissistic, and that just poisons a marriage, poisons any relationship. And so many people are guilty of that. And the millennials are the biggest ones who are guilty of it. But the parents are the fault there for raising a bunch of spoiled brats who have no life skills. And they're still living at home with mom when they're 30.
Well, so the work is cut out to help people to really understand what's going on. And you say something that I think is really powerful, that called this fighting and struggling that couples go through, giving Satan the glory. So please explain that.
Well, again, my target demographic is conservative Christian couples. There's a whole milieu of atheists and agnostics out there who don't acknowledge God or Satan. But with my couple demographics, basically all this fighting, they're not giving honor and glory to God. They're giving honor and glory to Satan and inviting Satan in to wreak havoc in their household. And why in the world would you want to do that? That's completely a self-defeating behavior.
Amazing. So now let's get to this piece that you said. What is the little-known fallout from divorce?
Well, that's the young girl who gets sexually abused by mama's new boyfriend or stepdad, and it, you would not believe how many women have confided to me over the years that they were sexually abused by mama's boyfriend, and it's my own father was guilty of that, and that's why it's so personal to me. And to his credit, and I give him very little credit, but he didn't force the girl. She was 12 years old. She hit puberty early. She was a very well-endowed little 12-year-old girl, and his wife worked days, and he worked evenings. And so the little girl was home alone with him all day long during the summertime, and she would run around in front of him, bra and panties, and say, "Listen, you can do anything you want to me as long as you give me booze." And he was such a sociopath. He says, I didn't do anything wrong. It was all her fault. She ran around in front of me in bra and panties, said I could do anything I want as long as I gave her booze. I said, first of all, she doesn't have the legal ability to give consent. Therefore, it is statutory rape. Second of all, you should have told her to put some clothes on and not run around in front of you half naked. And third of all you did was teach her how to be a prostitute. Great parenting skills. And I disowned him on the spot. I never talked to him again. But that is so common. You would not believe all the women I've talked to over the years who were sexually abused by mama's boyfriend or stepdad or even pastors. I mean, it's just, it's ridiculous. And so the biggest people I'm trying to save are these poor young girls who are sexually abused and just told to shut up and keep it to themselves.
And another
this often ruins them for a moment.
Another fallout from divorce is sometimes the children develop really negative attitudes about either men or women because one of the spouses, when they get divorced, badmouths the other spouse, or the new stepmom badmouths the wife and the mother.
Classic parental alienation syndrome.
Say it again.
I said that's classic parental alienation syndrome.
Absolutely. Yes. So
that's also
you have a
rampant.
Big task to help
yes,
people. It's really beautiful, the work that you're doing. And so I want to ask one final question. What has the Bible taught us about relationships, love, sexuality, and fighting? I know there's a lot, but what would you say are some key points?
First of all, as I said, God invented sex to glue marriages together, and he recognized the very strong sex drive in men. And in the Old Testament, he allowed for multiple wives and concubines because the primary wife could deny him sex, but the secondary wife or the concubine couldn't. She had to give him sex whenever he wanted it. And the change happened in the Proverbs 31 woman where it says the husband can safely trust his wife so he'll have no need of spoil. Well, now, the word spoil, there's actually 19 words in Hebrew translated spoil, and most of the Bible's translated as earthly goods, but that's not what it was. It was about the concubines, and it was changing from concubines to satisfy his strong sex drive, and now his wife has to take care of all of his sexual needs. And that it was also in part because he had fathered so many children, he could not be a father to all those children, so the children were suffering. So God changed it to where one man, one woman, and the man took care of those children that he had by that one woman, those biological children from that one woman. So that was the huge sea change from Old Testament to New Testament. And there's even organizations called Proverbs 31 Woman because they advocate that and show women how to treat their husbands. Because women oftentimes are not taught how to treat a man. They think they can talk down to him, which, you know, they think women good, men bad, and they talk down to him and insult his intelligence. And so it's not all the women's fault. They learn this from other strong women, and they think that's the appropriate way to conduct themselves, and all it does is break down their own marriages to their own detriment.
So it sounds as if you are really shaking concepts up, like tearing it apart
exactly.
so they can begin to see another way of looking at their relationship and being in it.
Well, that's the only way that we're going to affect change is to shake them up and show them a new paradigm, give them a paradigm shift. And once we get them on the right track and understanding the reasons why they need to do this, oftentimes we achieve great success.
Oh, it sounds beautiful. So what final words would you have for our listeners? And then tell us about your book and how they can get it.
Well, I would tell couples, listen, don't ever scream at your spouse. All that does is verbally and emotionally abuse him or her. Talk quietly with each other. Discuss ways that you can resolve problems. Throw out possible solutions and brainstorm them and discuss which ones that you like and which one you can ultimately decide is a mutually agreeable compromise instead of yelling and screaming. When a couple has a difference of opinion, they often start treating each other as the enemy instead of the problem as the enemy that they mutually and collaboratively work on to resolve as a team. Instead, they're divided divided and fighting against each other and saying hateful, hurtful things to each other, which often ultimately destroys the marriage.
So true. So tell us about your book and your trainings. Like, how can people connect with you and find out about it?
The book is a long title. It's called Sex Education for Adults, Secrets to Amazing Sex and Happily Ever After Two. My goal is to teach them how to have the happily ever after two. Sex is only one of those solutions. I discuss all the solutions, including having stepkids, battling stepkids, which is a big cause of divorce in today's society because they play the old divide and conquer because they want their natural parents back together. And that's the divorce rate for second marriage is 65% and third marriage is 75%. So the grass is not greener on the other side. And it's all because of battling stepkids. So I tell a couple, listen. I tell them, listen, keep the kids, the stepkids apart. Have the mom's kids come over one weekend and the dad's come over the next weekend, but you don't have them mixing together because that natural sibling rivalry is going to be fights every weekend, and the parents start taking sides, and the kids ultimately end up causing them to get divorced because they're getting drawn into the drama.
So tell about your trainings. We're going to have to end very shortly.
Well, I did a double major in Bible theology and psychology and went to grad school for clinical psych. I did not finish because I vehemently disagree with what they were teaching us and the paradigms that they were teaching us. And I resorted to the Bible because the Bible contains all the psychology that we need to fix the problems. For example, the Bible says a soft answer turns away anger. If your spouse is yelling at you, the natural reaction is to yell back louder to prove to them that you can't be bullied. And that often escalates into dysfunction. But if your spouse is yelling at you and you talk in a quiet, gentle voice, within about 30 seconds, you realize, oh, my God, I don't want to be perceived as being the jerk that I'm being right now. So I got to lower my voice because she's talking a quiet and gentle voice and I'm yelling at her. That, what's wrong with this picture? And without him realizing it, she actually took control. And once you start talking to each other, you can actually resolve the problem. That's just one tiny piece of psychology found in the Bible. And you won't find that in any other psych book. Or at least I haven't found it in any psych book.
So
it's original psychology.
So where do you have your training? How can people find out about that?
I went to college at Missouri Baptist University in St. Louis. I went to Mankato State, which is now Minnesota State at Mankato.
Excuse me, not your training, but where do you provide trainings?
Oh. I'm going to be doing seminars around the country. I'm starting out in my hometown of Jacksonville. I'm going to Orlando, then Tampa, then Miami, then Atlanta. And where I go after that, I don't know yet.
Okay.
The solution is to you can go to my website. It's Happily Ever After Solutions, or you can send me an email at marriagecoach1@yahoo.com. marriagecoach1@yahoo.com.
And
I'll be glad to talk to anybody.
After solution. Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
We have to end. It's been really interesting to speak with you. You're challenging so many assumptions. And I'm sure
and you challenge right back, and I accept that.
Yeah, but that's what's needed to get the dialogue going and shake
people
up and let's improve relationships. So thank you so much for being here today. And I'll thank you again for the
invite. Okay.
And to those
it was great to chat
to
with
those of you. Yes, wonderful. And to those of you listening, I'm your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, saying goodbye for now. And I hope you've listened to some of this and take in some of the thoughts and start improving your relationships today. Check out DrErikaGoodstone.com. See you again soon.